from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are glad that you've come back. We didn't scare you off. Well, maybe we did, but welcome back anyway.
Maybe the radio's broken.
Oh, it's broken on.
We can only hope. Hi, we're glad you're here. Remember, if you want to join in the conversation, you can find us on the Facebooks. They're Facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. And or you can Twitters us.
Yeah.
You can tweet us.
You've got all this like interweb language down.
I am hip. I am so hip with what the kids are talking about.
Yeah.
I can prove it. So if you start everything like that, then you're very hip right
now. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways. Hey, we got some cool things going on that we've just kind of started talking about. And you know, we had teased that big announcement in January.
Right.
We are committed to continue to bring in great hit writers and producers and industry leaders to visit on the show for you all. But once a month, we're going to change it up and shine a spotlight on the local songwriters.
That's right. We're going to do that, and we're gonna start that on January 22nd.
2 weeks from now.
2 weeks from now, each time, once a month, Scott and I are each going to pick a couple people that we think are doing great stuff out there, but haven't had that big success yet, but...
Yeah.
Need some attention.
We're bringing them in.
Yeah.
We're bringing them in. We're going to talk to them. We're going to have them play songs. We're going to spin songs off their CDs and just do all sorts
MP3s
of cool stuff.
Really. Can you spin an MP3?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just checking.
That's starting out January 22nd. So mark your calendars and spread the word.
All right.
All right, Hino. Let's get to business here.
Dun, dun, dun.
Talk about tonight's guest.
All right. We've been chasing this wonderful writer for a few years now. And, well, the restraining order finally expired. So she's here. We're super excited to welcome award-winning hit songwriter Natalie Hemby to the show. Natalie's got a truckload of hits so far. It's probably going to be two truckloads before we're done. But songs like White Liar, Automatic, A Baggage Claim, and Only Prettier for Miranda Lambert, Downtown for Lady Antebellum, Pontoon, and Tornado and a bunch of other songs for Little Big Town, Drinks After Work for Toby Keith, and just a whole lot of more stuff. She's got a brand new project out, a brand new album, and I think a documentary to go with it called Puxico that chronicles what she likes to call the roots of her inheritance. So, Natalie Hemby, we are so thrilled to have you on the
Thank
show.
You
Welcome
so
to the
much
Music
for
Row
having
Show.
Me. Yay. Thank you.
And she brought along her fabulous husband, Mike Ruck, as well.
Rucky, sorry. No, it's okay. I drug him along. It's really what it is.
Yeah. That's how most people get here. Yeah.
He's from Wisconsin, so it's
I was just there this week.
Really?
Freezing my off.
Just got back from Christmas up there.
Okay, yeah. I was in Eau Claire.
Eau Claire,
is where I was, yeah.
And the Packers just won, so, you know.
Did they?
It's because I was there. Yeah. I think that's probably what did it.
By the way, I know the Packers are a football team.
Oh! Yeah. Okay, I thought you meant meat Packers or way out.
No. Okay, so congratulations on Puxico. Not only is this a new project, but this is, after all these years, this is your first solo project. So,
yes.
What took you so long?
Yeah, well,
and why now?
It took me a really long time. I always tell people, basically, I spent my 20s trying to get a record deal. And then I spent my 30s writing songs for other people, and I'm about to turn 40, and I'm about to put out my first record. So I'm proud of myself for actually doing it, but it's been definitely a labor of love for both Mike and I. You know, I started off when I was 19. I signed with Barbara Orbison, Still Working Music Group.
Okay.
And she signed me on the premise of getting me a record deal. And this was during a time when they had, like, Sheryl Crow on the radio, Alanis Morissette. Like, rock radio was very prevalent.
Right.
I would say. And that's really what I wanted to do, was do more, like, roots rock type of stuff. And
Lilith Fair era, right?
Where yes,
a bunch of that.
Exactly. Sarah McLachlan and all those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tori Amos.
Yeah. Lots of great female artists out there. I mean, it was kind of like the pinnacle of it.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of like the dawning of the Britney Spears era, where it was super pop music, and it started coming out more, and then it was sort of like TV and film is what made people famous, and it just kind of got to a point where it was like I was getting lost in the cracks somewhere trying to get a record deal. I almost got a huge deal with Columbia Records, and it
in New York, right?
In New York, yes. Okay. And it just didn't pan out, which now I can say I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
But you know, it was kind of a weird time for me, and I was trying to find my way. And but this during this whole time, I still kept writing music, and I would write some for myself, and then I'd try to write with other people. But really, Mike, he started his career started taking off, and that actually is what kept me still in the game of writing music with people. And by the time Miranda's third record came around, that's when I was able to write with her. Like, she kept telling me, she's like, we should get together and write sometime. And I'm like, okay, you say that. And if you, right. I'll let you call me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stalk you or anything. But finally we did. And in like two sittings, we wrote like 8 songs.
Wow.
I mean, we just, and that was White Liar, and that was Only Prettier, and Virginia Bluebell, and the Airstream song is what we wrote on Revolution. So it's sort of, that's been sort of my journey. And then from there, I've just been really lucky and fortunate to be in rooms with people.
Well, speaking
that
of
I your, love.
You speaking
know?
Of your journey, though, your grandfather had a big influence on you early on. Did he teach you music, or did he teach you to write, or how was his influence?
Well, you know, George, my family is very musical.
Right.
My grandfather, he loves bluegrass music, and he literally grew up so poor in Southeast Missouri, and used to just sling an old guitar on his back while he's riding his horse and to go play with some of his buddies down in Puxico.
Wow.
And so he used to go and play like little bluegrass get-togethers around Puxico, Missouri, and I'd go with him and just kind of be under his arm watching him play. And we used to sing together, and he was actually the first person who recorded the first song that I ever wrote when I was like 18.
Really?
First decent song, let's put it that way.
Nice. Yeah.
Maybe. But so he was very, very influential, and George has a real, he's got kind of a Ralph Stanley kind of voice, which I love.
Okay.
But he used to sing this song about Missouri. It's like, how did it go? Oh, I'm going back to the boot hill of Missouri, back where the cotton grows so tall, just to be with friendly people who enjoy life together. Oh, Lord, that's what I miss most of all. And, you know, he had that real, like, it's that whole region has tons of talented people.
Mm-hmm.
Sheryl Crow's from there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And David Neal's from there. But, I'm blanking out on his name. The guy wrote Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Wonderful man.
Steve Cropper.
Yes, Steve Cropper. Yeah. He's from that region, too. And it just, there's lots of people who can play and sing, and whether they learn in church or whatever that is. But I really enjoyed watching my grandfather play his music. And then my dad is an amazing guitar player. He's played on tons of records, sort of the epitome of Christian music when it was really popular. But also has played with like Michael McDonald and Brian McKnight.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on names tonight.
That's
but.
All right. Well, let's talk about your dad, because your family had that strong musical relationship with Amy Grant.
Yes.
And not just your dad, but
my mother,
but your mom as well. So how did you kind of grew up with her as part of your family?
Yes.
When she was at the pinnacle of her recording career.
Absolutely.
So how does that influence you as a young young artist?
I absolutely worshiped Amy. My mom, she's worked with her now for over 30 years, so her, as her personal assistant. So literally, I was just a kid, and I used to go out to her farm out in Riverstone, and I'd ride four-wheelers, and she had these ponds, and I used to go swimming in these ponds out there. But I listened to Amy's music growing up, and I absolutely worshiped her. But one thing I remember fondly is she had this grand white piano in a sunroom, and I used to just go in there and play for hours, and she would just let me play and play and play. And she would come down sometimes and be like, that was really good, Natalie. I really like that song. And Amy's been very influential for me to watch, just because she's such a down-to-earth person. Mm-hmm. And I love her singing style too. It's almost like someone's talking to you.
Right.
She's not an over singer, and she's not, and in a time of melisma singing, you know, where that was, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was so nice to hear her voice and her calm tone just pierce through the radio waves in a way, you know? So I've always grown up respecting her and watching her, but I think for me, she's allowed me to do some really amazing opportunities that I never dreamed I could have. One of them being the first time I ever played the Bluebird was she asked, I wrote the song called The Naive One. It was my first song that kind of got me my publishing deal. And she's like, hey, I love that song. Would you like to come play with me? You know, play that song in Bluebird. And I'm so 19 and I'm like, oh, sure. Thank you. So,
what's up, Bluebird?
Oh my gosh, I love the Bluebird. So, well, her guest that night was John Hiatt.
Oh, wow.
Randy Scruggs. And this brand new artist. Her name was Patty Griffin.
Oh, my goodness.
My wife's favorite.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so I was freaking out over John Hiatt because I'm a huge Bonnie Raitt fan. And so they all, Amy went, John went, Randy went, and then Patty sang, and I just fell apart. She sang Old Man's House, and I just absolutely fell in love with her. And then I sang my song. I was very nervous. And then, but they were, Amy was so gracious to let me
do that.
So she's given me a lot of amazing opportunities in that form, in that way. So,
well, I've heard you say that she's kind of Amy's kind of the measure by which you gauge other artists and how they treat their fans and their coworkers, people that they work with. Why is that?
Well, Amy is very gracious, and I don't know. She doesn't really put herself. She doesn't think that she's better than anybody else. You know, she's very humble, and I like the way she's treated my family through the years and treated me and other families as well. But, you know, if you can't be a jerk in this town, it's too small, you know.
Right.
I had don't be a jerk on the way up and don't be one on the way down, basically, is my saying. You can put lots of other words in there, but.
Sure.
But I just have found, having grown up here, that if you treat people the way you want to be treated, you will be respected and you will have a much longer career. And people will love you both for your talent and your personality. And that's, you can't get your integrity back once you've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've tried hard to maintain mine. I'm probably a total jerk, but I just look up to
Amy. That's kind of the vibe we've gotten.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure all of our listeners did too. Total jerk.
I'm total jerk. Yeah. So. I treat Michael terrible. So.
Yeah, I can tell. He keeps flinching every time you raise your hand. I don't know. Hey, let's take a break.
Yeah, let's do that.
This segment was brought to you by our good friends at Main Street Productions. If you're an artist that needs music videos, and they're still out there. People are still out there filming music videos. These guys are great, and I was amazed at how reasonable they are. And Fred Wilharm is someone that we've known
for a
couple of years. He was doing when we were doing the TV show.
Right.
He was doing the filming for that.
Right.
So he's someone that we got to know, and I had no idea that his company had been doing producing pop, country, and bluegrass music videos for years, almost 20 years. They've won multiple awards for cinematography and editing. They can typically shoot your performance video in half a day or like a story video in a full day.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very, very economical, and they're using the top of the line. I mean, they do feature films too. So when you're going in and filming with them, they're bringing in just the top notch.
It's not
equipment.
A camcorder. Yeah.
It's not an iPhone.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, with a lens on it. So you can check out their music videos at mainstreetproductions.org. That's mainstreetproductions.org. And use their contact form to email, or you can give them a call at 516-3076. So again, that's Main Street Productions. .org.
Yeah, listen, we're going to be back with more of Natalie Hemby here on the Music Row Show.
Was a little camera shy till you called.
just a kiss. Won me over like a prize. Roman candle in the night. We lit again. Marching band.
Back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Natalie Hemby, and that is a song called Lovers on Display off of her brand new album, Puxico.
It's so brand new, it's not out yet.
It's not out.
It's out on Friday.
Right
Friday.
Here.
Is that the first time it's been played on WSM?
First time ever on the radio. My first song, like, with me and my voice on the radio.
Oh.
Nice.
So
we had to talk over
it. This is very special for me.
Wow. Okay,
so, that's awesome.
Cool.
Love that.
See, I was just saving this moment for you guys.
See,
there you go.
You know?
There you go.
I was trying to get my record done so I could come on and play
right.
in first place.
Yeah, you wanted to do something first, you know, because all those hit songs.
Yeah.
I want to talk for a minute about Jody Williams, because he's had a bit of an impact on your life.
Huge.
Not only as a publisher and a mentor, but you may not have met Mike without Jody, right?
I would have never met my husband had it not been for
his
Jody.
Fault?
It's all his fault.
So talk about finding the right people to be around and learn from.
Well, Jody, actually, he used to have a publishing company here in town. And
Jody Williams Music.
Yep. Yes. I still have all the tapes and the CDs that were made from. But I get a phone call from this guy, Mike Ruckey, who is producing some of the demos for some of his writers, and he's like, hey, you want to come sing on this? And I was like, sure. So, you know, and we immediately became friends. I still have the pieces of paper where we switched our numbers and that sort of thing. But it's so funny because Jody has been so instrumental in both of our careers at such odd times. For me, yes, I met Mike through Jody. And then when things started doing better for me and he was at BMI, he got me my first co-write, which this was a huge deal with Carrie Underwood, because she was, it was like on the Jesus Take the Wheel during those times, you know?
Wow, yeah.
And he kind of set in motion that co-write, and he's just been so instrumental in, for both of us, of just championing us as people, as musicians, as songwriters. But also does it with integrity, you know. He's been like a father figure to me, honestly. Or he probably would rather be my uncle or something.
Yeah, a brother.
Older
figure.
Brother.
Older
brother.
Brother.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I love Jody so much.
Yeah.
So much. I lean on him a lot. Yeah.
I'm going to back up a little bit, because you were talking about, and this goes into, this is going to move into forward, but in those years when you had the deal with Barbara Orbison and you were working on a deal, and you were the artist, and so you had songwriters coming to write with you,
right?
What was that as a young 19-year-old, and then you have these hit writers that are coming to spend time with you and want to write with you? What did you learn that you liked and didn't like?
Right,
about writing with an artist
that you were able to apply
the
other way.
That's a great question. You know, I am very fortunate. The first person I started really writing with was Tommy Lee James. Mm. And we weren't writing country. We were writing more rock stuff. And he spent a lot of time with me, and we wrote together just a ton of times with different people as well, in different co-writing situations. And then, you know, over time, I've learned basically during that time, you don't want to write with someone who's too pushy or who's a know-it-all. Mm-hmm. Just more, and Tommy was great about that. He never told me my idea was stupid or anything like that. Like, he was very complimentary, but he would also teach me and be like, well, what about this? You know, what if we take it more in this direction and that sort of thing? It's better to be influential than to be just such a hard hammer, you know?
Because that's a great way to just shut you down, too.
It is.
Especially if you're younger. And here's this guy or girl that's had all this success.
Absolutely. And, you know, you respect people who are successful songwriters, but you know what? We have a lot to learn too. I will never sit here and go, oh, I've got this. I know how to do this.
Right.
I mean, I want to keep learning. I want to be inspired, and I'm always looking for young, new talent too, to latch hold of and learn from as well. You know, if you stop being influenced, then you stop growing creatively, I think.
Right.
So, but I think my biggest thing though is whenever I write with artists, I always just try to be respectful to their ideas. And then also, I also like to write with artists who will, you know, take a listen to my ideas too.
Sure. Right.
I mean, it's no fun. I like thinking about people's records and, hey, how can I contribute to this? And what have they said that, what can I say for them that they haven't said already? You know what I mean?
So let's expand on that, because preparation is a big thing for you.
Yeah.
So you really do study when you're going to be sitting down with Miranda Lambert.
Absolutely.
And I think I heard you say, look, she has the blowing things up and I'm mad at you down. She doesn't need my help with that.
Doesn't need my help. Yeah.
And I think a lot of us would say, oh, I got this great idea about some guy and you're mad at him because...
Oh,
you know,
totally.
That's what you tend to pitch to Miranda Lambert.
Right.
Yeah.
She never thought of that.
Yeah. So talk about how you look at going into maybe another direction without changing, you know.
Right. Bridging over is very important as an artist, to go from one record to another. For Miranda, it was like I wanted to see a kind of a sweeter side of her as well. But also, I loved the cattier side of Only Prettier.
That's a great song.
Which, you know, to me is sort of like... You can still be that person, like, don't mess with me person, but just in a much nice Southern way.
Bless your heart.
You know?
Yeah.
He's such an ugly baby, but bless his heart. I mean, literally, you can get away with murder. But I feel like even with Little Big Town, it was like Pontoon was such a fluke how that was cut. Because literally, we kind of, basically what happened, I wrote a song with Luke Lair called Fine Tune. And then someone thought we said Pontoon, so then we were like, oh, let's get Barry Dean and write the most obnoxious song called Pontoon. And we kind of did it, no lie, as a joke.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm literally singing like, on a pontoon. I mean, I'm being like funny.
Right.
So then, you know, they pitched it around and all this kind of stuff. I don't know if I can say the original first line of the lyric.
It's rhymes with hitch.
It wasn't back this hitch into the water.
It starts with another letter that happens to be the second letter of the alphabet.
Absolutely. Right. And I think that's why it might have gotten noticed. So, because it just comes right out of the gate.
Right.
You know, with
right.
that.
Bang.
So, but Little Big Town, they cut it and they made it something so cool. And Jay Joyce is a great friend of both Mike and I, as we love him so much, but he made that song so cool. They made it cool. And so that was fun to see happen. But Tornado was the one where I wanted to see them do something very ballsy. And mm-hmm. I just basically sent it to just a terrible work tape to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen was like, can we hold on to this? And I'm like, sure. And I wrote it with this girl from like Liverpool.
Really?
Yeah, her name is Delta Maid.
Okay.
And it was her first trip to Nashville.
Wow.
And her second trip to Nashville was her number one party for Tornado.
Nice. That's a great song.
I loved the song. I loved how the video turned out, too.
And the production on it is just...
It's awesome.
Like, you can study it.
I mean, it's so good. I absolutely flipped out the first time I heard it.
So, backing up a bit with Pontoon, was that groove there? In your guys' demo?
No.
So what was...
Not the... Brum, 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 brum. None of that. No.
So then when you play it out, do you have to like go back and learn how they did it so that you...
Oh,
or how
people
does that...
are so disappointed when they hear... I mean, it's almost so ridiculous. I just almost make it a comedy thing. But no, literally, I play it like sitting on the dock of the bay more.
I mean,
dun, 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 you know, back this hitch up and, you know, so I kind of play it out like that. But yeah, no, their version is way better.
That's awesome. I love that.
There's a story. I don't know if you've heard this, but I'm hoping you tell it. But you guys were, you celebrated the hit song by actually going out and buying a pontoon.
Oh, yes.
And will you tell a story about your daughter?
Oh, yeah. So Mike and I, if you're going to buy a pontoon, well, someone has to take the plunge. So Mike and I, we went out looking for boats, and he was like, we already had a boat, actually, a smaller one. And we were like, let's get a pontoon now.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this guy had a pontoon, and literally he was selling it. It was brand new. It was really nice.
Craigslist.
It was on Craigslist. Yeah. Yeah. And so basically we took it out for a spin. When we get there, actually, it didn't work at first because he hadn't changed a battery in like 2 years.
You're okay. Supposed to change. It was his worst nightmare because nothing worked. He's going to show us this boat. My parents are with us, our daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And nothing worked right.
But that's awesome.
It was fine. It was a new, almost new boat.
It was, yeah, it was super nice.
And how old's your daughter?
She, at the time, she was a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, was she about a year?
She was pretty picky about it. Yeah. At the time.
But she was already singing and stuff. So.
Yeah, she was already singing. So she knew motorboating, which is... Uh-huh. We could talk about that later, but sure. So we take a ride. We love the boat. We're about to get off, and the guy is very nice. But she goes motor boat in, and the guy looks at me. He goes, "Oh, that song is so awful." Having no clue that I had written it.
Oh,
and I'm like smiling, and I look at Mike, and I look at his parents, and I was like, "That song's a piece of crap," and I just walk off the boat.
Wow.
And we bought the boat. But
you still bought it.
We still bought it.
Okay.
He's a nice guy.
You know what? I'm not too precious. I think it's hilarious. Those are the stories you live for. Really.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wrote one of those.
I wrote one of those songs people love to hate.
Yes.
Well, I had to listen to that song every day, several times, because my kids loved it so much that on the way to school, we would have to play it over and over and over.
That makes me so happy.
They love it. I mean, I love it too. I love it too. So don't get me wrong. I think it's a great song.
But we'd hear it in other people's boats too, across Percy Priest Lake. It was like Percy Priest's anthem. And I was
Do you putter over and say that'll be 0.04 cents, please?
Unless it's Spotify, then it's 0.00013.
Just buy me a beer instead.
There you go. Well, when it comes to writing with an artist, let's say, Keith Urban, for example, how important is it to sing the way they would sing rather than how it would come naturally for you? And can you give us an example of...
Well, you just gave the example. I wrote with Keith. I've written with Keith a couple times, mm-hmm. and Keith is he's crazy, incredibly talented. And
hate that.
I know. Yes, it's really disgusting.
Good thing he's so ugly.
Yeah, that too.
But he, you know, it's funny because he and I, we just write differently stylistically wise. Mm-hmm. But he did say something to me one time that totally, I was like, well, that makes sense. He was coming up with the melody for Because I Know a Good Thing, because I wrote that with him and Mike Elizondo. But as we were doing a melody, I was singing this melody, and it was probably, honestly, more Sheryl Crow-ish than Keith Urban-ish. But he goes, see, when you sing that melody, that sounds really good. He's like, but for someone like me, it wouldn't sound good singing like that. And I was like, well, that totally makes sense. I was like, so how would you sing it?
You know? Yeah. So you do it better then.
So you do it better. Well, show me what you got. So. No, but I was just like, touche. I totally get that. So he kind of ran with more of the melody. But it is important to find, you know, I think the reason why Miranda and I work is because we both really kind of like rock music. You know what? I think I'm the country version of her. I'm sorry, the rock version of her, and she's the country version of me, honestly, voicing-wise. Mm-hmm. Okay. For some reason, our voices go together. Karen, however, I totally lucked out because Karen and I have the
same... Karen Fairchild?
Fairchild.
Yeah, from Little Big
Town. We have the same kind of timbre in our voice, and it almost freaks me out because even when... One time she was playing back some of her voice memos, and I was like, that sounded like me talking. That freaks me out a little bit. But it's so nice because, you know, it is awesome having an artist that you love and respect, and you can kind of get where they would go melodically.
Right.
And I think that's why Hillary Lindsay and Carrie Underwood have worked so perfectly together.
Right.
Because, I mean, I think both of them have similar styles of singing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a nice thing to have, you know, as you're writing music for somebody.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I know.
Before we take a break, I just got to ask one more pontoon question.
Pontoon question. Yeah.
Did it sink?
Yeah. About motorboat.
No.
Let's talk
about Yes. That's what I want to talk about. So, there's certain things in there.
Right.
Are you thinking as you're writing this, oh my gosh, this is hilarious. No one will ever sing this on the radio.
Partly, yes. Only because of the very first line of the song.
Right.
But
right.
To be honest, we were like, pontoon, making waves and catching rays up on the roof. Jumping on the back, don't act like you don't want to. Party in slow motion. And we get to the point out here in the open and we're like, well,
what's next?
Motorboating. What are you going to say? That's what you got to say.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's how we did it.
Yeah. All right.
We yes. We had a chuckle and we just moved on.
Okay,
nice.
Of course, yeah. Didn't make much of it in the video.
It was all Barry Dean's idea, really. Yeah. So you guys got to have Barry Dean on.
Okay.
He not only is he a great writer, singer, he also has the perfect radio voice. So
really,
oh great, he can teach us a thing or two. What are you saying?
Yeah. I'm saying you want to have him on all the time.
You know how like right now how. I know you and Scott hurt my ears.
Yeah.
Barry Dean doesn't.
Does
Barry Dean
do
sounds
that.
Great.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of Natalie Hemby, and we'll probably twist our arm and see if we can get them to play a song for us.
Right.
So we'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.
Awesome.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Natalie Hemby, and that is a tune off her brand new album that's called Cairo, Illinois.
Yes.
The album's called Puxico, which isn't in Illinois, so I'm a little confused.
I know Cairo, Illinois.
Do you?
It's
actually Cairo.
Oh, is it Cairo?
Cairo.
No.
I always say it wrong.
No, actually, you said it correctly, but I decided to call it Cairo because I just thought the average person who probably right. doesn't know where this location is
yeah.
would say
Lafayette.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that
exactly.
town is so sad to drive through.
It is so sad
because
to drive through.
Because it's just all run, I mean, it's all boarded up.
It's yeah. it's basically the bones of something that was once beautiful there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, it used to be gorgeous.
I've called you driving through there before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
I know that.
And the reason why I love it so much is because it reminds me It's that feeling I get going to Puxico and the feeling that makes me sad coming back.
Aww,
you know,
yeah.
it's just sort of a lonesome, very lonesome place.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful in a way, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of haunting beautiful. So I.
Like a pontoon.
Like oh, a pontoon. Like
what do you feel like playing for us?
I'm going to play a song I wrote with my good friend Kelly Archer and my good friend Jen Schott. Actually, she had this title, and it was about her dad. Her dad had passed away a few years back, and she had the title, This Town Still Talks About You.
Oh.
And I wasn't planning on making this part of my documentary, but it just seemed to fit so perfectly in some of the most poignant parts of the film. So, and it's also on my CD, and that's the one I'm going to play. Ready? One, two, three. Seems like there's not a day. Since you moved on.
That song. How do we find you? How do we find this CD?
Well, it is going to be for sale on iTunes, Amazon, any kind of music outlet on Friday, my luckiest day, Friday, January the 13th.
Fantastic.
Nice. All right.
And what about the documentary?
The documentary is for sale. It's at PuxicoFilm.com, and you can purchase it there as well.
Gee, how does someone spell Puxico?
PUXICO.
.com.
.com. Yeah.
Right. So like Mexico, but with a puh in front of
with
it.
With a puh in front of it. Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Thank you. Hey, this segment was brought to you by Cairo, Illinois Chamber of Commerce. Please come visit. We're going to be right back. We got one more segment with Natalie Hemby. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Music Row Show.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are back, and that song is called Return, which is off of Natalie Hemby's brand new album called Puxico.
That's the lead song from the CD, which is available at all digital retailers now.
Yes,
wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you can actually go check out the documentary at PuxicoFilm.com.
Yes.
Now, Natalie has a show coming up this Friday, a CD release party.
You don't say where.
At Third and Lindsley. And if you go to thirdandlindsley.com and look at their calendar, you can slide on down and you can click here to buy tickets. And there are no current tickets available because she is sold out. Because she is awesome.
She's just that amazing.
Wow.
Right there.
It might actually be that Puxico is coming, so.
Okay. Yeah,
the whole town.
There you go. So I've heard you say that you really identify with the ticked off side of life.
Yes.
How has that helped you as a writer?
Well, it's helped me greatly. I think I've, you know what? I'm a very nice person. I just
just don't mess with you.
I do have inner dialogue going on, but yes,
but
totally.
You keep it inner.
I keep it inner dialogue. Okay. So, but you know what? It's so funny talking about, this isn't funny, but Debbie Reynolds. I was a huge fan of Debbie Reynolds growing up. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I was the unsinkable Molly Brown. Okay. And I feel like that feisty person sometimes. Like, I just want to go out there and conquer the world and do my best. And then sometimes I feel completely opposite. But I think that has helped me, though, tremendously, because I also grew up listening to women who were very sassy, you know, mm-hmm. Bonnie Raitt. Yeah. I did. I loved all those female artists that were in.
That was such a cool time musically. There was great stuff out there.
It was. Yeah. It was rock and roll. And it was kind of, I loved
Joan. And you didn't have to be half naked.
No, you didn't.
Unless you wanted to be.
Well, and, you know, no. I'm not going there.
No, but I mean, it was. It was more about being cool and you know, playing good, you know? I don't know. I loved, like, bands like The Breeders and weird, like, crazy stuff at the time. It was just so, mm-hmm. It was a great time of music. I'm definitely a 90s child.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
I love the space in your songs. How do you keep from putting too much in a song or making it too complicated? Is that ever something that you have to rein in?
I mean, you know what? Mike probably answered this better than I can. But, you know, I feel like on this record, mm-hmm. You know, it's different when you write for film and TV, because there has to be, you can't cram too much in, you know, and you can't be too on point. You can't be. So I had to.
There has to be some vagueness.
A little bit. And, you know, just more of a broad picture. I think, I don't know if it's really, we strive for space in a song. I think it's just, whatever sounds good to us, you know, at the time, because I'm sure we have plenty of busy songs.
We probably do.
So,
well, you write to tracks sometimes, especially with some of your co-writers.
Yes.
Is that easier or harder than just coming up with something from scratch for you? And if you can offer any tips on what writing to tracks is like for folks.
Well, for pop music, it's great, you know. If you're going to write for more pop stuff, it's absolutely, because it's quick. And if you have a great track guy, it gets done pretty quick. And, I mean, there's so many amazing things you can
program.
I mean,
but even somebody like Luke, who you've written with.
Yes.
Will come in with.
Yeah, he'll come in with great tracks. Luke does great tracks.
Luke Laird, by the way. We don't want to sound like we're just.
Yeah, like we're so in the know. We just, all we need is the first. I just call him, use the first letter, you know. Because
Luke Robert. you know, actually, there's a really funny story about him. I shouldn't tell it, but I'm going to.
Oh, do.
So he basically got to write with Snoop Dogg, and I'm totally stealing his amazing story, but he got to write with Snoop Dogg, and he had all these tracks ready to go. And he said Snoop was there before he was, like early in the morning, and he was kind of surprised, and he was like, all right, what you got, you know, what you got, Luke? So he plays him this first song, and the song is called Weed and Whiskey, which it's pretty amazing. It sounds like a Snoop song.
Right.
And he said that Snoop just took a hit off his, you know.
Milk.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm, and then he goes, that's the one, nephew. So I call Luke nephew.
Nephew.
So that's what I call. Okay.
Can I just say, you do a remarkable Snoop Dogg.
Thank you.
No kidding.
That's Snoop the one
Natalie.
Nephew.
I like that.
No.
So
Snoop Natalie.
I want to talk about just keeping going. You are a professional songwriter. You write every week. All the time. How do you push when you're not into it? You got a co-write appointment and you're like, I don't even want to do this today. But if And then quite often from those things,
oh yeah,
coolness happens. But how do you keep yourself pushed and going when you're really not into it that day?
Oh, I'll just lean on somebody else. I mean, I think that's what we all do. It's kind of, I mean, because you cannot be on every day. You just are not. Mm-hmm. But I think, though, it's almost like it's like anything else. It's a muscle you use. And when you are not feeling on, if you're a runner, you don't feel like running, you still have to run, right?
Well, right.
It's kind of, I have no idea.
Yeah. What is this running you speak of? Yeah.
What is this exercise you speak of?
You, well, when you have to lay on the couch, you really have to lay on the couch.
Okay, I get that. Sometimes you don't feel like laying on the couch, but then you do, and it's okay.
Yeah.
I got you. Thank you, Hino.
You're welcome.
You know what? Also, I have a deep reservoir of just terrible, awful ideas, and sometimes you just have to reach.
You too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
You reach back into 2014's voice memos and you go searching for them if you're not feeling too inspired, and then you get depressed because you realize those were bad ideas too.
Wow, so. What a bunch of turds.
I was really hoping there'd be some gold in there, but no.
I really fooled everybody. So.
Wow. So you've actually gotten a chance to write with some of your idols over the years. What was that like for you, and can you tell us the story of like one of the great ones?
Well, my only idol, honestly, Sheryl Crow is my idol.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to her records nonstop. I knew who played on them. It's like I knew everything about her stuff, and she was from Missouri as well, and I related to her voice. But the first time I got to write with her, it was with her and Jeff Trott, and I didn't sleep at all the night before, and I came in and I was like. She's so nice, you know, has no makeup on. Hey, can I get you some tea? Like, I'm her best friend. And I was like, sure, sure, you know. So we sat down and we tried to write a song that day. It just did not work out. And I was kind of bummed out when I left. So then here's where Vince and Amy pop back into the picture. Vince asked me to play a round at the Hall of Fame with him. And it was him and Sheryl and Keb Mo.
Oh, my there you gosh. Go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me see. Yes, I will.
Yeah. Let me check my schedule.
But I got to talk to her and we hung out for a while. And then I was like, look, I was so nervous writing with you. I'd love to write with you again. She goes, oh my God, I would love to write. So we got back together and we've become friends now. But, we wrote my favorite song that I just, at the time I completely related to. It was called Stay at Home Mother. And it's the last song on her record. On her country record.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that I'm the last song on her record because I always loved the last songs on all her records.
Oh, wow.
So I just, and those are some of my favorite songs anyways, but this song was so personal. Like we were writing this and we were kind of crying and basically it's talking about how you wish you could be a stay-at-home mother, but you are working a lot and you have, it's just a really well written from her perspective, absolutely song. I mean, I love that song. But they say never meet your idols, but I'm really happy to have met mine. And I'm actually glad to have met her as she's moved to Nashville. Because sometimes when you meet people in the height of their career, they have that faraway stare of, I have so much going on.
I don't even know what
I don't even know
right
where
now.
I am.
I don't know
or
where
who
I'm
you
at.
Are or yeah.
And people can take that the wrong way. You know, like, oh, that person's such a jerk or they weren't very nice to me or whatever. And really, it's just really hard to be that famous. I mean,
I know.
You guys know this.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. It's so hard.
Isn't it?
I'm not saying a word. I know.
Talk to the hand. Talk to my people.
It's so hard.
So we only have about a minute or so left. So Puxico is the album.
Puxico's the album.
And
Puxico the film.
PuxicoFilm.com.
Yes.
And is it playing in theaters or anything? Are you going to be touring in support of this? Tell us about that.
I have some big tour dates coming up, but I can't announce them yet.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I'm really, really excited.
So where should they go to find out about the tour dates?
You know, that's a great question.
Why would you ask that, Hino?
Eventually, actually on my Twitter, absolutely.
Perfect.
That sounds weird, doesn't it?
No.
That.
Twitter. But, how do we find you on Twitter?
Natalie Himby.
Okay.
That's my Twitter.
Cool.
How did you come up with that?
I know.
That's
it's
awesome.
Crazy, isn't it?
Love that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you guys
Thanks,
so
Mike,
much.
For coming in.
Thank
and
you. Really
congratulations.
It
what a great
it's
great
awesome.
Offering.
Yes.
Great
thank
project.
You. I'm excited.
And hopefully we can get Mike to come in another time and we can chat with him because, you know, she monopolized the conversation.
Totally
yeah.
Mike, hold it down. Would you please?
Jeez. All right, go check us out at themusicroadshow.com and we'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.
Thank you. Yay.